Good morning. Welcome back. The pasuk tells us, "Kaitz kol vaster balufanai, ki mala haaretz chamas mitneya." Rashi famously writes that although the Dor HaMaba was guilty of many of Gilui Arayos, of many very chomer averos, leinechtam gzaradinam, their fate was not sealed, el al gezel, because of gezel, because of theft, that is what sealed the fate of the Dor HaMaba. Now this Maimer Chazal clearly underscores the severity and the Chomer HaDavar of Dinei Momonos, how important it is to know and be aware and be careful with other people's money. But Rav Shlomo Rafael Hirsch makes a beautiful point, beautiful diuk from this pasuk. The choice of words is very interesting. The pasuk does not tell us Kates Kabas about Kimala Aretz Gezel. It doesn't say Gezel, it says Chomos. What does Chomos mean? So in this pasuk, in this context, it refers to stealing less than a Shava Pruta. Less than a Shava Pruta. So Rav Hirsch asks, is that what they were busy with? There were no bank robberies back then. There were no muggings. They were just walking, steal less than a Shava Pruta. What's the big deal about Chomos that this is the thing of the cause, Kates Kabas or Valafana? So he answers that for every crime, there's a way to deal with it. You have too many murders, you hire more policemen. You have too many robberies, you build more prisons. There's a solution. Chomos, the halacha is einu yotzei b'dayanim. It's such an insignificant amount that bezin doesn't do anything. You get caught, there are no penalties. It's an avera, but we can't do anything. So, Shem Shafal Hirsch, crime we can deal with. But when people go around stealing pavos mi'sheva pruta, when people start gaming the system and start behaving in a way with kruma shtick that you can't technically nail them on, that's something that undermines society. And that's something that leads to kates kabasar balafanai, yehishlas kabasar as darkai. The only thing that can lead to is a mabul. Now we learned this morning, the Mishnah tells us that if a person pays for goods and doesn't do mashiach, he doesn't accept delivery, he has the right to back out. Now we're going to be focusing on the next few weeks, the next series of shiurim, is going to be about deal making. A person makes a deal, he's negotiating. At what point does the deal become final? Where is the point of no return where the parties are locked into the deal that they can't change their mind, they can't back out? But what our Mishnah tells us is that if a person pays for goods, but he does not do Mashiach, he doesn't do a Maisa Kinyan, again we'll explain that with the details of it a bit later, and that locha is Yochel Afzabah. You have the right to walk away. You are not bound to the deal. But nevertheless, Abul Amru, Bez Din gives him a curse. That Misha Paro Mi Anshe Dor HaMabel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that took retribution from the Dor HaMabel, Hu Yifrim Mish Enoy Mi B'Dibro. He's going to punish the person that does not honor his words. And the Mefarshim explain that this is referring to the Pshat of Shlomo Rafael Hirsch we just mentioned. A deal which is just verbal, you've paid, you didn't make a kinyan, it's not binding. If you back out, there's nothing Bezdin can do to force you to go ahead with the deal. But Bezdin warns the person that the same way the Dor HaMabel, by engaging in such behavior, taking advantage of a situation, taking advantage of the fact that there was no legally binding contract, you can do it. You'll get away with it. We can't force you to go through the deal. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Yefrem Mimish and Yomid B'Dibur. It will punish such a person. And therefore, as we go through these halachas, we're going to see there's going to be one shiloh in every case that we deal with. There's going to be a question of, is this enforceable? Is this deal, is this contract binding? Can the parties, can we force the parties to go through with it? But there's going to be a second question, besides the chayev or potter, is going to be a question of mutter or aser. Even if it's not technically binding, even if there's room for a person to wiggle out of it, is that the right thing to do? Or is he a person who is eino imid b'dibure? Now, to introduce the concept, let's just start off with a story loosely based on a maram al-shech. A person manufactured goods in China. He's a manufacturer. He manufactured a whole container full, put it on a boat, shipped it to the United States. While it was in transit, a client, a customer came to him and said he wants to buy the entire container. He wants to buy the entire run. He was a good customer. He paid in full. And for simplicity, we'll say he paid in cash. We don't have to deal with checks and wires. And he paid for the goods. This customer then went ahead and found and flipped the goods to someone else. He had his client, and that person didn't pay in full, but they sat down, they wrote a contract, and that's what happened. The day after they signed the contract, the ship promptly sunk. And now the question is, who suffers the loss? What's the shaila? The shaila is, if I have goods, a person manufactures goods in China, and he sells it to someone, they have a verbal agreement and he paid for it, is that enough to consummate the deal? Does that mean now the goods belong to the buyer and therefore he suffers the loss? Or does it still belong to the manufacturer? And then we have the next question. When the buyer flipped it with a contract, is a contract a halakhically valid way to flip goods, to transfer goods, or not? Now, the Maram Alshev's case is a little bit dramatic, but this question really comes up every day. People will come into a store, they'll buy something, they'll hire someone, and they'll either sign a contract, they'll give a deposit, and at some point, very often, people want to back out. They want to change their minds. And therefore, it's very important to know at what point does a deal become binding, does it become final, and where do we say that that's it, they're locked in, they can't be chozer. Now, this brings up an issue which in Chosh Mishpat is very different than what's out there in civil law. Legally, my understanding at least is, if two parties, I want to sell something, you want to buy it, as long as there's a meeting of the minds, we agree, I'm selling it, it's sold. There's no magic, there's nothing that we have to do. It may have to be in writing because of the statute of frauds, but as long as there's a meeting of the minds, I'm buying, you're selling, it's a deal. It's done, and the parties have a contract in the consideration, but that's all you basically need. And the halacha is very clear in Siman Kuf Pei Tes that a mekach is in nigmar b'dvarim. Words alone cannot create a binding agreement. A person can say, I'm buying this, the seller can agree to sell it, they can make a price. The mechaber adds, the Sratu Shneim, they both agree on the deal. Upasku Hadomim, they set a price. Afilu Hayada Bifnei Edim, they bring witnesses. We want you to be witnesses that this deal is final. Still the halacha is, Shneim Yichayim Lachsabem. They're both allowed to walk away from the deal. Until there is a Maisa Kinyan, until some sort of formal act is done, an agreement is not binding in halacha. It doesn't mean that backing out is the right thing to do. We'll get to it a little bit later. But if you want to know, can you force someone through with a deal? The answer is no. Doesn't matter how firm the commitment is. Doesn't matter how much proof you have, how many witnesses were there. Without a Maisa Kinyan, the parties are not locked in. Now, how do you make a Kinyan? So to make a Kinyan, we have to first look at what are you buying. If you're buying karka, if you're buying real estate, then the classic kinyanim are kesef, you pay for the real estate, it's yours. Shtar, you sign a deed, you deed over the property. Once you have a title, it'll be yours. Or chazaka, you tell the seller says you can move in, you know, it's yours, we'll take care of the contract and the money tomorrow, but he tells you to move in and take possession of it, you move in a certain way that shows bailus, it's yours. That's a valid kinyan. Mitaltalin, when you're buying movable goods, the halacha is very different. And here the halacha is, and that's what we saw in the Mishnah, paying for metalkalin is not a kinyan. You have to take physical possession of the goods. You have to do mashicha, pulling it, lifting it, yad, chotzer. You have to take possession. Simply paying for the goods is not a kinyan, and the parties can back out. Now, there's machlokes of Yochanan and Reish Lakish that we saw on Daf Mem Zayin. Why this is true? Reish Lakish says very simply, midoraisa, paying for goods is not a kinyan. You want it to be yours, you have to do mashicha, you have to take it into your possession. That's Reish Lakish's shita. Rabbi Yochanan, who we passed him like, argues. And Rabbi Yochanan says, midoraisa, when you pay for goods, it's yours. But this leads to a problem.
Why?
Because you walk into a store, you want to buy a camera. They don't have it ready for you. You pay him in full. And he says, come back tomorrow and I'll give you the camera. Fine. Come back that night, you see the moicher in shul, and he tells you, oh, today, this afternoon was a terrible, very, very hectic afternoon. There was a fire in my warehouse.
Fire? What happened? Did the whole warehouse burn down?
No. Only one camera got burnt.
Alright, so why are you telling this to me?
So the Meicher says, because it was your camera.
What's the halacha?
Now, midoraisa, according to Rabbi Yochanan, when you pay for a camera, it's yours. So, if a camera gets burnt, and the Meicher somehow, he had put aside a camera for you, and he says, this was your camera that got burnt, the halacha would be, the buyer lost his money. So we have a problem. Once you pay for the goods, and it's yours, but you didn't get delivery yet, there's a tremendous risk. If anything happens, the buyer is not in possession. He can't protect it. It's in the seller's warehouse. The seller that already got paid for the goods and has no responsibility for it has no incentive to guard it. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, because we are afraid of nisrufu kitecha ba'aliyah, we're afraid that there'll be a fire in the attic and the warehouse and it'll get destroyed. Therefore, the halacha is Chazal said, we are getting rid of this kinyan. Even though midoraisa, it belongs to the buyer and the deal should be done, and if there's any loss, it's the buyer's loss, Chazal said we're being oiker the kinyan, and until you do mashicha, it does not belong to the buyer. Nevertheless, although Chazal went ahead and said it's not a kinyan, Chazal did not want people taking advantage of this halacha. And they didn't want people to suddenly go turn around and start backing out of deals once there was an agreement and once it was paid for. And therefore what they said is, we're going to give you the legal right to back out, and that way if there's a fire, the seller now has a very good incentive to protect the merchandise to make sure there's no loss. But if someone does back out, under many circumstances, he will get a nishepara. Bezin gives him this follow, this curse, for not standing by his commitment, for not standing by his words. And that way, in general, people won't back out. In extreme cases, if there's a fire, where they have the right to back out, and again, we'll see when you do get the call and when you don't. But that's the basic parameter. Midoraisa is a kinyan. The Chachamim took away the kinyan because of this problem, but they left in its place a kol, a curse, to persuade people to honor their words, even though they can't be forced anymore. Now, the Ramah points out, the language of the Gemara is very interesting. The Gemara has a problem, a chashash, of nisrufu chitecha ba'aliyah. You paid for the wheat, you didn't get delivery yet, so we're afraid it's going to get burnt in the attic. Who said the wheat's in the attic? Oh, why are we talking about an attic? Zot Darkei Moshe in Siman Kuf Tzadiches. It's from the Mordechai from the Yerushalmi, a very tremendous chiddush. The whole reason why Chazal took away the kinyan is we're afraid the thing will get burnt. What if the goods are not in an attic? Attics are made out of wood, they're very susceptible to fire. What happens if they're sitting in your vault? You're selling diamonds. You accept payment, the goods are sitting in a fireproof safe. Zok to Darkei Moshe, and the Ramah brings it down, this halacha does not apply.
And in this case, the moment you pay for it, the deal is done.
Others argue. The Messiah says, like, look, once Chazal took off the Kenyan, they took it off across the board. But the Ramah, and Lachari, you can say, can we like this Ramah? The Ramah says that if it's in a secure place, if it's in a house made out of stones where there's no problem with the fire, the Ramah paskins, that's how halacha doesn't apply. And the moment you pay for it, the deal is done. So even if something happens, lightning strikes, and somehow it does get destroyed, it'll be the buyer's loss.
Is fire the only issue?
The Sma says, the Sma in Siman Kuf Tzadikheh says that fire was the only common concern there. And that's why other things we weren't concerned about. The Rambam happens to be, when he brings down this halacha, he says we're afraid it'll get burnt or it'll get stolen. So the Rambam seems to make it broader in other chashashas. Let me just finish a minute. Now again, the Beis Yosef and the Shach argue, they say, well, plug, once Chazal took away the Takana, they took it across the board. And therefore, Zakta Pisnei Tshuva, what happens in a case where the buyer is insured? He has fire insurance. Now there, is there a problem of Nisrufu Chitecha Ba'aliyah? So this is Pesach Tshuva says, and I'm not making this up, there's no problem, because the best thing that can happen to the buyer is there's a fire. Because he's going to collect on the insurance, he's going to put in a claim for who knows how much. Things apparently haven't changed over the past few hundred years. So Pesach Tshuva says, there's no chashash, he'd be thrilled. But still, according to the Shah that says loy plug, we're going to say across the board the kingdom doesn't take place. Then he adds, and again you can check this up, he really says this. He says maybe the reason why we have this chashash of nisur chitecha ba'aliyah, even if the guy is insured, is they're trying to protect the insurance company. People are going to put in claims, no one's going to be safeguarding it, and they'll have the loss. But the bottom line is, if it's like Tshuva Paskins, like the Shach and like the Nesivos, that even in such cases you will have the right to back out, you will get the klolo, you'll get the Mishapara, but you have the kinyan will not be a good kinyan. Now, what is a Mishapara? So as we saw in the Mishnah says the language that's used. Beis Din tells the person that Misha Parmeanche Daramabel, that Kodesh Baruch Hu that punished the Daramabel, the Mitzriyim, Anche Stoyim Ba'amoyro. He had a list of cases where there was a tremendous Einish, a tremendous punishment for things that were done. Hu Yifram Mimi She'enoyim Bidibura. He will punish a person who backs out, who doesn't stand by his word. The Ramah adds that this curse is not just done in Beis Din. What we do is, someone gets up in public on the bima, they probably do it in shul when there's a whole crowd, and they say the story. Reuven, this person took money, he agreed to sell something, and he backed out, and they curse him directly, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who punished the Ramavo, who punished the Dharamis, he should punish Reuven. They mention the specific name, they do it in public, and it's a pretty strong incentive for a person to go ahead and to honor his words and not to back out. The Mechaber is a little bit more makel. He says you don't mention the person's name. You just say Hu Yifram Mimi She'enoyim B'Dibur. You say it as a general kala. But the Ramah says we're very specific and we do it in public. Now, what happens in the following case? A person sells goods, he accepts money, and he doesn't make any other kinyan. So if he wants to back out, what's the halacha? Halacha is he has the right to back out. There's no kinyan. But he gets a mishapar. What happens if before he backs out, he sells the goods to somebody else? He sells it to a goy, or he sells it to someone who skips town, he's not around anymore. The first person comes back and says, listen, I gave you the money, I paid for it. I want you to honor your words. If not, you deserve mishapar. What's the halacha? So they hear this, Divrei Goyinim, that quotes a Kisei Eliyahu, Chesh Mishpat Simen Kuf Nun Vav, that says, he's not sure what the halacha is. Why? Because what's the halacha of mishapar? Why are we giving the person the curse? Is this a punishment? He was in Olim Medibura. He made a commitment. He accepted money. So to punish him, we give him a klal. If that's the case,
So clearly over here, does he deserve the punishment? Yes. He sold it to one person, he accepted money, and he backed out. He deserves the punishment. However, there's another possibility. Is the pshat that it's a punishment to punish the person for what he did? Or did Chazal institute this in order to encourage him or to force him to honor his words? If that's the case, so if he still has the goods, and he's telling you, I don't care that I told you that I said I'm going to sell it to you, and I don't care that I took money, I'm not going to honor the deal. So then, Bezalel will give him the Mishapara in order to convince him and persuade him to make good on his commitment. But if that's the pshat, then what happens if the goods are gone already? He sold it, he can't get them back, there's nothing he can do about it. So then, it could be, there's no Mishapara. Excuse me? Right. Oh, so that's a very good point. Now, there's no question about it. If you want to know, the person who did this, who backed out, Misha Parame Ashidarma, who Yifram Misha and Omidiburai, he will get punished. So if you want to know Klape Shmaya between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is he going to get an Oynish? Clearly he's going to get the same Oynish whether or not he sold it to somebody else. But the question is, does Beis Din make this Klala? Do they go ahead and have this inform him? Do they do it publicly and announce that who Yifim Misha and Omidiburai? So there we have a Shaila. Is this a punishment or is this an incentive? Now the Michas Pitin points out, what? Okay. Excuse me? And Chaim, but he has the money. He can pay for it. So as he still has the money, he can get the Mishavara. So Michas Pitin makes a very interesting point. Because what happens if I sell you goods? And you make a kinyan. You take it, you do hagbah, mashicha, money, you do all the kinyanim in the world. And you leave it by me. A few minutes later, another customer comes in, he sees the camera, he offers me $300 for it, and I sell it to him. What's the halacha? So, person's a goslin, right? You stole something that didn't belong to you. What's the punishment for a goslin? You pay kashas egzela. Which means, if assuming the camera was worth $300, and the first customer did have the ball, but he didn't pay for it yet, so he owes me $300. So now that I sold his camera, I have to reimburse the first person $300. He owes me $300, I owe him $300. It's a wash. So what does Beis Din do if a moicher sells something that belongs to the first kohen? They do absolutely nothing. Now again, you want to know what he did, he's a goslin. Clearly he'll get a punishment. But Beis Din can't do anything. So Zakhar Minchas Pitim, are you going to tell me that if the first person makes a kinyan and it's his, and the moicher steals it and sells it to someone else, all he has to do is give back the original money and it's a wash and nothing gets done. But if they didn't make a kinyan, he just paid for it without any ma'aseh kinyan, there you're going to tell me it's more chum, or there you get a mishapar. It's not misavah. And again, it's not clear in halacha, but it seems to be, it's probably a safek. But one thing that does come out is that it really depends what the sale price was. If the goods were worth $200, and I agreed to sell it for $150, and I accepted the money, there, everyone agrees that if I want to back out, I'm going to get a mishapar unless I give you the extra $50. Because although I agreed to sell it for $150, it's worth $200. That means this deal, had the deal gone through, the buyer would have gained $50. If I don't go through with the deal, he's losing that money. And therefore, if I'm not going to reimburse him for that hefsid, there clearly would be mishapara. But in a case where it's a wash, in a case where the first sale was for the fair market value, and now it's impossible to go through with it, there is a shailin halacha, and according to many poskim, you would not get a mishapar. And this leads us to a very interesting question.
If he returns it, does that, do they retract the mishapar? They have to get the mishapar.
Right.
I'm going to get it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that somehow retract?
I mean, if I don't know if a curse can just be pulled back like that. It's a klolo is something which I can't really tell you in Shemayim what happens when a person gets a klolo, but it seems that a klolo once given, yafilu b'chinam, has an effect. Certainly the person still has to do tshuva, and it's certainly the right thing still to make up for it. You don't say once he got the klolo, but he just moves on. But if he's planning on backing on retracting, he should do it before he gets the klolo.
Is it really just in lieu of like, steal? giving him the law.
There is no law because there's no kinyan. But instead of just telling him he can walk away scot-free, we're telling him he deserves his klala for backing out of his commitment. And this leads us to a very interesting question. We have a suffer. We don't know what's that. If the seller sold the goods, he no longer is in a position to honor his commitment. Does he get a mishnah parah or not? What happens when you have a suffer? Now, what's the normal rule when we have a suffer in dinei mamonos? Hamoitzi mechadeo avaraya. Whoever the mufzik is wins. Now, in this case, who's the mufzik? This person sold it. The seller has the money. The seller is prepared to give back the money, so he's the mufzik and he'll win. What about in the other case? Let's say the buyer decides to back out. And it's a case where there's a suffix. It's not clear on halacha whether he gets a mishnah parah or not. So do we give him the mishnah parah or not? So the Ba'ach, the Ereshai, the Achas Reichel, and most places can say, we don't. Why? Because the buyer gave the money. Al pi halacha in choshen mishpat. Does he have the right to ask for the money back? Was there a kinyan? The answer is the kinyan does not work, and he has the right to demand his money back. Now we have a suffix. Does he deserve a mishnah parah or not? Misafik Bezin doesn't walk around cursing people. And therefore the halacha is, according to many poskim, that misafik, he can back out of the deal, take his money back, and he doesn't get a mishnah parah. Mishpat Shalom argues. Mishpat Shalom suggests, and we'll get more into this in future shir. What is the pshat? What happened when Chazal said that when you pay, you can back out, but you get a curse? Is the pshat they said that money is not a kinyan? Money is nothing. It's like nothing happened. It's just a verbal agreement. But because you paid and you want to back out, so I'm going to give you a purse. That would be one pshat, if that's the case. So in this case, the buyer wants his money back. The seller has no right to hold on to it. The sale didn't go through. And therefore, he'll have to return the money. And since we have a suffix, we're not going to go ahead and give him a shapar and make a curse if we're not sure. Is that the mishnah pshat? Maybe that's not the pshat. Maybe what happens is like this. When I pay for goods, midaraisa, what happens? It's a kinyan. Midaraisa, the moment I pay for it, it's mine. The Chachamim came along and said, because they have this problem of Nisra v'chitech ba'aliyah, they said, we're going to give you the right to back out. We're going to give you the right to back out. But when you back out, you're going to get a mishnah parah. If that's the case, what happens if the buyer wants to back out, but there's a suffix, whether he gets a mishnah parah? The seller can tell him, listen, as far as I'm concerned, you gave me the money, there's a kinyan. Now, it's true, Chazal took off the kinyan. But they didn't just say, no more kinyan. They said, if you accept a mishnah parah, then I have to give you back the money. Until you accept that mishnah parah, I'm not prepared to give you back the money. And therefore, the Mishpat Shalom says that nothing doing. Even if there is a suffix, until they actually get the mishnah parah, the seller can say, I am not giving you back the money. Now, it's a problem, because Beis Din can't give you a mishnah parah. There's an issur to give someone, you can't just walk around cursing people. There's an issur to curse someone. So again, the issur, the law is only when you use the Shem Hashem, but it's also to curse another yid. And Beis Din's going to be stuck, because Beis Din has a suffix, they can't give the klal mishnah. The buyer says, I want to back out. And the seller says, I'm not giving you the money until you get a mishnah parah. So the Mishpat Shalom suggests, as a little bit of his pshara is, that although normally, according to Ramah, we curse the person specifically, we say that mishnah parah me'anshei dar hamabo, hu yifra mei, and you say the person's name, the person that's backing out. Over here, what we do is, we follow the mechaber's lashon. We say, hu yifra mei she'eino eim b'dibura. It's a general global curse that whoever is not standing by his word, Hashem should punish him. You're not cursing a specific person, and therefore there's no iser. You're not being specifically to him. And this way, the buyer will be able to get his money back. But the Mishnah Shalom paskins until some form of mishnah parah is administered, he cannot be chozer. He can't get his money back. Now this shiloh, again, it's going to come up a number of different ways. Is a very studious Nikashaila in Mishapara. Did Chazal, were they oiker the Kenyan? Did they go ahead and say that the money is absolutely nothing, there's no king in it, as if nothing happened? That seems how the first sheets are held. And that's why a buyer can demand his money back, and if there's a suffix, he doesn't get any shakar. Or do we say no? That money is a valid kinyan, something happened. Chazal said if you accept the mishapara, you can walk away, and therefore until you accept the mishapara, then the kinyan will still be valid, and both parties will be locked in. This shaila will have tremendous nafkaminas lahalach. Because what would be, for example, if you give a mashke? Person walks into a store, he wants to order a camera, he wants to do a camera, he doesn't have all the money for it, so he gives half the money and says, I'm going to come back tomorrow, I'll give you the rest, and I'll take the camera. What's this deposit? It's a security, it's a mashkin. It's to secure me to the deal. Or, actually, to discuss the case that the Rishayim talk about, person wants to buy something, again, they come to an agreement what the price is, what the terms are, and then he says, listen, take a mashkin, he gives him a ring, he gives him something of value as collateral. This is collateral to make sure I'm going to go through with the deal. I'll come back tomorrow with the money and I'll take the goods. What happens if he backs out? Is there mishapara or not? So zak the rif. Why do you get a mishapara? So the Gemara said, there are two shitas. According to Reish Lakish, when a person pays for goods, midoraisa, does anything happen? No, Reish Lakish holds money is not a kenyan. You need mashiach. So why, when you pay, do you get a mishapara? So zak Reish Lakish, because even though it's not a kenyan, since you gave your word, and not only did you give your word, you went ahead and you cashed, started doing an action, you started paying for it, that's more chomer, you get a mishapara. So if that's the case, if you give your word you're going to buy something, and you give collateral, it should also be a mishapara. There's a commitment with an action, equals a mishapara. But that's Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan holds that what? Midoraisa, when you pay, what should happen? It's a kinyan. Chazal went ahead and they said, because of a problem of Nisr Chitecha, we're going to take off the kinyan. But we're going to take off the kinyan and we're going to create a mishapara in its place. If you give a mashkin, is that a good kinyan? Collateral, no. Mono inkan, mashkin inkan. You didn't do a maisa kinyan at all. And therefore, zok the rif, since what you're doing could not be a kinyan, you're simply a mashkin, there's no mishapara. According to Reish Lakish, all you need is a commitment with an action. Giving a mashkin is an action, there'll be mishapara. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who we pass in life, we need more than that. We need that you did something which midoraisa should be a kinyan, just Chazal downgraded it. So in that case, and this is what we hold halacha l'maisa, giving collateral, giving something as a deposit to lock you in, would not create a mishapara. You'll need to do something which at least has the potential to be a kinyan. Okay, so you bring up a host of issues. The first point is you'll have to figure out, this whole discussion is about buying metalpulin. Metalpulin, Moy is going to be open as a kinyan. Chazal said it's not a kinyan, and therefore we have that issue. By karka, once you pay for it, the deal is done. Schiras poyalim, if you hire a worker, that's a completely different set of halachas. You're not buying anything, you're hiring a worker. Now, when you're making a chasana, what are you doing? Are you, on one hand, you're renting the hall, that's schiras karka. Schiras karka, clearly, money would be a kinyan. You're also buying the food. Buying food is buying metalpulin. That's clearly a question of mishapara. And the third thing that you're doing is you're hiring workers. Schiras poilim, kablonas, is going to have a completely different set of halachas. No, the caterer is not just, is not just delivering it to you raw. The caterer is being hired to prepare the food. So there are three separate transactions that are taking place at the same time. You're going to have to go through each one at a time and figure out what happened, what the ramifications are. Now besides that, I'm glad you brought up this point. We're talking now in Hichos Kinyon. Is this deal a binding deal? Very often you'll have cases where even if there's no kinyan, there's a concept of mazik, the concept of garmi. If I tell you to do something and I cause and you suffer a loss because of what I did, because of my negligence, I may have a claim against you as a mazik, as a tort, that you caused me damages. Now, it's two completely separate issues. In Hilchos Kinyonim, that would be if you went to Bezdin and said, for tonight, this wall is mine. And therefore, I have the right to use it. That's what we're discussing in Hilchos Kinyonim. There's a separate issue in Hilchos Mazik. If he doesn't show up and you suffer a loss, you'll bring him to Bezdin and say, you had a hezek, you have to reimburse me for my loss, whatever that will be. And that will have completely separate halachas. So, the fact that it's not a kinyan doesn't necessarily mean there is no remedy.
That's not what the problem doesn't exist. Like, in the case of the hall, with food at the front, the
excellent. Okay, excellent. So, a few points. Something that doesn't exist, forget about Mishapara, normally the halacha is a loibola oilon, it is not possible to make a kinyan. You can't buy something in halacha that does not exist. That being said, there's halacha in Siman Reish Tes, that if something exists, but it's Einu Birshusai, in other words, there are many chickens out there. It could be the caterer happened not to have had 300 chickens, in his refrigerator at the time he took the money from you. But it's Yotze Hashar. They're readily available, at whatever price it is, you can go out onto the market, you can go and buy those chickens. There, the Loch and Siman Reish Tes is, you could make either a kinyan, or at least there would be a Mishnah Parah. So as long as it exists, even though it's not in his possession, but if it's readily available, Mishnah Parah applies, and perhaps it could even be a kinyan gomer.
So readily marketable inventory would have a kinyan, but something like a special manufacturing inventory wouldn't have a kinyan.
Correct. If it's something that doesn't exist, if you want to go ahead and you're buying a used car, and the dealer says, I don't have any in stock right now, but give me X amount of dollars, and I'll go to the auction and I'll get it for you. So if you're buying an 08 Camry, where he's going to go to an auction, there'll be 100 of them there. There would clearly be a Mishnah Parah, and possibly even a Kinyan Gomer. Again, that's a Sugya and Siman Reish Tes. However, if you're asking him for some exotic car, which is not readily available, then there probably would not be either a Mishnah Parah or any Kenyan, because it's Einu Birshusai. Correct. Now we will, again, we don't have time for it today. A deposit we're going to have to deal with is not going to be that simple. The case of Mashkin is where you gave goods as collateral. You gave a ring, you gave something of value. The Yushalmi, and it's quoted by the Darkei Moshe and the Bach and a number of other Rishonim, says giving money as a deposit will be different. Since money is something which could be given, if it's given as a Kenyan, it works. If it's given as a deposit, there may also be a Mishnah Parah, even though it's only a deposit. That's one point. And the second factor, which we'll get to more in depth next week in Mirtz Hashem, is that when you give a deposit and it's understood that if the parties back out, the deposit is non-refundable, there are shittos that hold that arrangement where you forfeit the deposit is in lieu of a Mishnah Parah. And again, it's something we'll go into more in depth, the next week or the week after. But so the halacha in your particular case will not necessarily be the same as the halacha in Shulchan Aruch that talks about a mashke.
I thought it goes back to the beginning. You mentioned that a kinyan would help. How would you deal then with buying commodities from wherever? As you're buying crate loads of sugar or whatever it is, and it's not possible for you to go physically pick it up. We're making Kenyans on the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. Does halacha deal with those kinds of purchases?
There are other ways. There is a Kenyan siddur that will work even without physically picking it up. So there is an eitzah, but you have to find an eitzah. You have to do one of the valid kinyanim. That's a Rivas problem. That runs into all sorts of Rivas. Hopefully, maybe we'll get into more next week. But
stock options are same thing.
Theoretically, but you're usually dealing with a clearinghouse.